Okay, so this is Richard Mortimer from the Platinum Coaching course, and we're talking tonight on the Q&A call with lots of different questions being asked. So I'm basically going to go one by one and answer these questions. There's been a question on niche selection. This is obviously can be a bit of a difficulty if you've got no experience. So I just wanted to basically cover that very, very simply and give you a sort of overview and also perhaps some ways that you could choose a niche if you haven't done so yet. The most important thing is we're information marketers. So we're looking to market information. We're looking to give people information and sell information to people. There are people in various what are called niches, different aspects of, you know, the online world, who are looking for information. And so we want to be in a niche where there is a lot of money being spent. You know, some information people will pay a great deal for. And particularly, you know, the online business or the those kind of things where there's quite a direct correlation with what they're spending, with the return they're getting. Because, you know, building a business of any kind is, you know, if you got some tip that would help you in your offline business and increase your revenue, well, that's worth something. You can easily grasp, you know, what that's worth, and therefore it's very easy in that sense to sell to business people, people who are looking to have a career or a business online or offline. So what we're looking for is a niche where there are people. I'm just going to use an example just to show you sort of both ends of a marketer in the UK who I've met called Chris Freville. Now, Chris started by having a little website about quilling. Now, a lot of people may be asking, well, what's quilling? Well, quilling is, doesn't really matter, but quilling is where you get strips of paper and then you curl them and you make like pictures, like a kind of art form, a specialized art form. And you think, well, how could he monetize that? Well, he did very well. He actually got somebody who was a quilling expert. He agreed with them to come for a day, went to a studio. Then he filmed them demonstrating the quilling and showing people. So they were teaching on the video. So he spent, you know, quite a bit of money doing that. You know, probably hundreds of pounds, hundreds of dollars to achieve his product. And then he had this website and it was very, very popular and he did very well with it. But obviously the amount of revenue is limited. You know, you're not going to get $50,000 out of a year, out of a quilling site. It's just not going to happen. You could, of course, you know, have other art sites and then, you know, have a lot of people, a lot of traffic, a lot of different sites teaching that kind of thing. And you maybe could get a reasonable income out of it. And Chris actually has ended up selling that website because what happened is he met another marketer in the UK who said to him, you ought to get into internet marketing. And obviously he'd got some knowledge from building that site and it being successful. And he was able to use that to teach other people and so on. And it went from there. And he's now still in internet marketing. He's very successful and he's had several coaching courses running and so on. So you've got the two ends there. He's gone from, you know, a very small targeted niche to going into internet marketing. The interesting thing about internet marketing is, of course, that anybody online is effectively doing some kind of internet marketing. If you're trying to monetize a website, well, that is internet marketing. If you're generating traffic, that is internet marketing. Traffic generation is a subset of internet marketing. And the thing is, you know, people look at internet marketing, well, there's lots of people with lots of experience who can do lots of different, teach them lots of different things, and, you know, I can't compete with them. But remember that, you know, this is a bit of an encouragement for those who are perhaps looking at internet marketing. I don't want to say it's the only niche. It's obviously the one that I know the best because I've spent most of my time working in that one. And this coaching course is really in the internet marketing niche. We're teaching people how to build a business on the internet. But the good thing about IM is that the internet changes very fast. So yesterday's, you know, information, it can be out of date. It moves that fast. And therefore, there's actually an opportunity for younger people to get in. Perhaps not in a general sense and teach on the whole of internet marketing, or maybe even on a sub-niche of internet marketing. For instance, traffic generation is a sub-niche of internet marketing, but maybe an aspect of traffic generation they could find. Let me just give you a couple of ideas here, and these might be things that people might want to run with. You know, maybe you're thinking, well, I don't know anything about internet marketing really, apart from your own experience, and you're feeling it's not something you go in. But think of something like Google Plus. Now, Google Plus, people say, well, Google Plus is, you know, it's coming too late. There's other websites that are going to dominate it, but Google is really pushing it. And there are lots of things you can do with Google Plus you can't do with other websites, you know, Twitter, Facebook, whatever it might be, other social networking sites, excuse me. So Google Plus is quite an opportunity right now. And remember that there's a link with the Google search, and Google is the market leader in search traffic. So there's a correlation there. Plus YouTube, of course, video marketing is probably one of the biggest traffic sources, not the biggest traffic source at the moment. And it's likely to remain that for quite a long time. You know, there's something that perhaps won't change unless there's a new medium, but you can't really think of anything taking over from video. So, and there's a link there, you know, Google, YouTube, Google Plus, and that's all going to develop. So somebody finding out about Google Plus and teaching people, there's still a lot of ignorance about Google Plus and how to use it. That could be a niche you could go, and you can buy products from the website I'm going to recommend later on, the masterresalerights.com, which you can find, and this will take you to an affiliate link to find it. It's mrr.im-pro.org. If you go to that link, you'll see various folders, and just click on the one that says Master Resale Rights, and that'll take you to that site. And you can find products on there. There's several about Google Plus. Mostly they're e-books. And obviously, you're limited if you don't get the chance to edit them or whatever. You know, the rights vary on what you can do with the product. But you could put a product together using that. You know, there's no copyright on information. So if you were to read something in a report and then put it into your own words, I don't think that is violating copyright. But that's just one area of internet marketing and traffic generation that might be something that appeals to perhaps some of the younger people. I'm not saying it's exclusively for younger people. I'm just saying that, you know, younger people perhaps feel that the credibility thing is a bit of an issue for them, and that might be an idea, is just to go for something like that. A big niche is personal development. People do spend a lot of money on themselves. And in a sense, I've mentioned this before in a call, but obviously we've got a lot of new people now. I'll just say this again, that personal development really is an overarching niche, because if you think about it, wanting to have an income online, that is a subset of personal development. And I think the thing about personal development is that it's probably quite strong on the credibility side, that you do need to have some credibility to make the most of it, and that obviously can be quite hard getting going. But, you know, it's possible, obviously, if you're very targeted with what you're telling people and teaching them, you can build that credibility very quickly. I would think the best thing is not to start off too general, but to be actually quite targeted. For instance, goal setting as an aspect of personal development, that might be something that you can do. What about other niches? Well, I don't really know much about other niches. Obviously, we know the sort of standard ones that are popular, and that there is quite a bit of money being spent in those niches, like fitness, health and fitness, and dog training, and those kind of things. Golf, you know, the sports, tennis. Those are niches where people do have a lot of money, a spendable income, and they are looking for information. You know, golf's a particularly good one, because it tends to be people with a, you know, you have to have a good income or be quite wealthy, even in Western terms, to play golf. And therefore, and you know, it tends to be older people who perhaps, you know, might be doing it as a hobby, and they would need to have some tips to help them, and they'd be prepared to pay for that. But I'm just going to give you some overall tips now. And I've actually, I'm crediting these to Trevor, who released a product yesterday. And actually, who, I think most of you have probably seen that product because I actually, I thought it was so good, I wanted just to offer it to people because I thought it was a good opportunity for people to be helped about product creation. And one of the modules on that is actually on a niche selection. He's actually got it on video two. There's 10 videos, and the second video is about niche selection, and basically gives several ideas of what you might do. And basically, they come into three categories, really. There is websites where people are asking questions and looking for answers. So, for instance, Yahoo Answers would be a classic one. That might be a good place to research a niche. Then, of course, there's books. You could go to Amazon, particularly, and other book sites. If people are spending money on a book, you know, it's very expensive to publish a book, then that usually means there is some money to be spent in that niche. And then, of course, you've got knowledge sites like Wikipedia and other Wiki Answers, those kind of sites where, you know, they're not sort of knowledge-based. You can type in questions very often to these or do a search, and you get some idea of niche selection. So that's how Trevor covers it. Anyway, that's just a sort of overview of niche selection, and hopefully those who are still struggling might be helped by that. And then when we get a bit later on in the call, there's something that I think I'm going to give you a very targeted training for people and tell you actually exactly what to do. And I hope we've got time for that. But that might be a way for people to get going. Because the most important thing in all this is to, you know, just get going. If you agonize too long about your niche, you're not going to get going. It's better to select a niche and take action and see how you get on and then maybe modify it later. You know, it's better to select one of you and stick with it, obviously. But if you don't do anything at all because you're still making decisions about things, then that's the absolute worst result. You know, you just have to get going and take a decision. Sometimes it's a bit hard, but we do have hard decisions to make. So now I'd like to cover another aspect of our business, and also to do with a question that's been asked, and that is to do with product creation. Relating again to Trevor's offer, which I think most of you saw last night. Basically, in the coaching, most of you have done your what we call a matrix. So that's really 10 topics with 10 subtopics under each topic. That'll become clearer to those who just started on the coaching when you get to it, which is the second lesson. You get the teaching on the matrix. But basically, think of it like this. You've chosen your niche, so your niche is your overall topic, and then you choose 10 or more, or around about 10 topics within that niche. So things, you know, there might be a step-by-step approach, it might be things that people need to know, and so on, but you divide it up into various topics, around about 10. And then you take each one of those topics and you divide that into subtopics. So effectively you've got around about 100 subtopics that you can teach on. And as I had a question to do with you know, pricing, I just wanted to give you an overview of what we're aiming for here, those of you that don't know and haven't thought of it in this way yet. Now, I'm speaking from the internet marketing niche, which obviously is a high demand niche where products do command, you know, higher prices. I know you can get good information for low prices, but there's a bit of psychology involved here. And this is something you need to bear in mind, that when people pay a higher price, they're more likely to get a good result. And that's really what you want. You want a good result. And you might say, well, okay, how do you decide where to price it? Well, what you can always do is you can put up a sales page with a high price on it and then offer it lower and see how it goes. And, you know, work it out that way and find out the best point of entry for that particular product. But from your subtopics, you really would want to speak on about or create a product that covers three topics. So you've got 30 subtopics, if that makes sense. You know, three topics with 10 subtopics underneath. So that's about 3 hours of teaching, whatever that relates to in pages that I don't really know. I think it would probably be about, I think it's something like a page a minute for, you know, a reasonable size type, although of course people do increase typefaces, and you can get, you know, big variation in what is on each page of a PDF. But if we think of it in terms of recordings, then because that's the easiest product to create, then you're looking at a three-hour product being $197. That's what we should be aiming for. And then a 10-hour product being $997. And when you get to the point of being able to sell that kind of product at that kind of price, that's when you're going to start to realize your financial goals. If you indeed have got a goal that's high, you know, $50,000, $100,000 a year, you know, it's a big goal, that. And obviously you need some traction and leverage, and that's the way to do it, by having high-ticket products. And these would be products that wouldn't just, you know, teach about a topic, but actually get people results. So, in other words, they should be able to, from that, buying that product and implementing it, get a result, and that's what they've paid for. Okay, so I just wanted to talk about coaching now. Now, the interesting thing about coaching is that this is really putting all the emphasis on the access that they have to you. I was just emailing with somebody just in the last few days and saying, just imagine that your product is actually worth nothing, which of course isn't true. You know, obviously something that's you're going to be coaching on, the core training of a coaching program is going to be, you know, quite high value in and of itself. But let's just say that it was the $197 product that you'd got. So you'd done your 3 hours recording, and you felt that was worthy of your niche, that it was something that people were going to get results from, that you marketed at $197. So you wanted to offer the same, because it was such a successful product, you wanted to offer it as coaching. How do you do that? Well, what you do is you offer exactly the same training, which is going to get the good result, but you add access to you. What does this do? Well, this increases the value of the product for a start. But that's obviously not the main reason for doing it. The main reason for doing it is that you're going to get people with getting even better results with the coaching, because when they get stuck, they can come to you for help. They have access to you. You know, there's various ways you can do it. You can critique what they're doing, look at their website, and give tips on how to improve it. You can, you know, offer like email access with questions. People, when they get stuck and they want some advice, they come to you and email you, and you can email back. You can have a weekly Q&A call like this, and you can do that various ways. You can have you know, interactive, or you can just have it where you're teaching, and you know, get them to submit the questions by email or another way. One thing you can do is you can set up a little help desk. There's actually a simple little, what can I call it, a script. And you just add that to your website. And what happens is when people go to that page, they just put in their question and then they submit it, and it goes to your email. You just set it up with your email address. So that's a very sort of good way of doing it, because obviously when they go to a page like that, they know that they're not interacting with you directly. They're doing it sort of a distance away. But what I found with the coaching, just to sort of let everybody know, is that we've got about 50 people enrolled now. And I have had quite a few questions today. We've had quite a few people just join in the last few days. So within the last week, I've had about, you know, 5 to 10 people enroll who are beginning. But right now, the open email access which I'm offering you all is not become overwhelming, not just yet. And you know, the Q&A calls are manageable. We've got quite a lot to get through tonight. That's the first time, really, that it's perhaps been an issue. So, you know, it's possible to offer quite a lot of access to you, at least to start with. And really, I'm just using, you know, the example of what I've done with this coaching to encourage you with that. You know, it's a very low entry point coaching, $7 a week. And then, you know, open email access. I'm offering a lot, but you can do it. And that might be a way of getting started. And then obviously you can offer a lot more than, you can charge a lot more than, ultimately, you can charge a lot more than your $197 for your 3 hours of training, or even your $1,000 for your 10-hour training, which perhaps is more likely. I mean, what you might do to start with is if you were to create a 10-hour recording product and want to sell it for $1,000, is offer access to you. So you make it like a kind of, with a coaching element, but obviously the main thing is the core training, and then that would increase the value in people's eyes, but you still charge the same amount. So this is how you might be able to offer your early on offer, you know, high ticket products by giving them a coaching element to the product, if that makes sense. Okay, so how do you get started? So really, I'm now just sort of going right back and thinking of people who are just starting out. You still, you know, perhaps even struggling with a niche because you don't feel that you know anything particularly. But I'm going to cover the actual what people to do if they are even struggling with a niche a bit later. But what I want to do now is just talk about the entry-level product offerings. The thing to bear in mind with all this is, if you're always offering people $7 products or $27 products or $67 products, that is how you're going to be perceived. So I would think most of you on the coaching, well, I know that most of the people I've interacted with, if not all of you, are definitely capable in the future time of offering high ticket products. But maybe, you know, that just seems a little bit too far away and you're struggling for various reasons. You know, they can be legitimate reasons. For instance, your first language might not be English. That's a problem that you have to overcome. You might be, you know, quite young, and that's another issue that you have to overcome. I mean, obviously, the good thing about the internet is people don't actually know much about you and don't necessarily see you, so they don't actually know your age. And if your content is has the credibility, then that's usually good enough, if not always the case. But I'm just giving here a little way to get started. And what you can do is, you know, create a product that would be your free offering. Now, most people think, well, I just want to offer something low value as an entry point. But the truth is that entry point products, you know, have to be very good these days, because people just won't sign up. It's not worth it. They're on so many lists. And, you know, because of spam, and because of the amount of emails people are receiving, giving an email and a name today is a lot higher value than it was, you know, 5-10 years ago. So what I'm saying is that your front end offering has to be perceived as a high value. Let me take you an example of Michael Rasmussen. Now, Michael Rasmussen has produced 3 video series, and he claims that those products are worth $97, and actually I believe him, they are that good. He's got one product which he brought out, it's at least 5 years ago, if not more, called Email Promos Exposed, where he goes through the whole of email marketing. Well, not the whole of email marketing, but writing emails, headline, you know, that kind of thing, how to get people to open the email. So it's very, very good from actually writing an email, a selling email, a persuasive email. He's very good. Obviously, some things might be a little bit out of date now, so you've just got to be careful with the information, but that doesn't mean to say you can't benefit from it. Generally speaking, it's going to be, you know, teaching cutting-edge things, and nobody's come out with a product that matches that. Maybe that's the reason, because he's offering what he could have sold for $97 for nothing. You go to that site and you basically sign up for free. Now, of course, he's got an OTO, which is how he monetizes the site. But you don't need that necessarily. The main offering is very, very high value. I'm just saying this to show you that he's done that because it was a deliberate policy on his part. He felt, I'm not a no marketer. I'm going to offer something very, very good value. They're beautifully produced, very, very good teaching. Nobody's ever matched that product for teaching specifically on writing emails that sell and are persuasive. So, you know, you do have to come up with a good front-end offer. And in some ways, your free offering has to be better than your $7 product. You're going to think, well, why will people buy the $7 product? Well, because obviously you're teaching on something else at that point. You're not teaching on the same thing. So, you know, I can't really give you too many tips because there's too many directions in which to go, but you've got to think this out. You've got to think, what can I teach on as my front-end offering that's I'm going to give to people for free, but I could actually charge $97 for? You know, what I'm going to be teaching on a bit later on is how to take a private label product and make it your own product. That's a great way to get started. But probably what you want to do is have your front end, so the product that people are coming onto your list being something you've created yourself, if you can, which is why you might want to, if you haven't already buy Trevor's product creation course, which is he's just selling as a Warrior special offer for under $7 still at the moment, and a few people from the coaching actually did buy that yesterday or today. So that's basically just giving you a little bit about the front-end offer. It has to be a high-value product that you're offering. What about Warrior special offers like Trevor's product is, like this coaching was? Like you often, most of you probably seen what Warrior special offers are. Well, they have to be something you've created. So obviously, you could offer a free offering. You could make a free WSO, and that will cost you $40 each time that you submit it. So you submit it initially, $40 it will cost you if it's approved, and then you can bump it when it's dropped off the second page. So when it goes off the second page, you're able to bump it. That costs you another $40 each time you bump it. You probably don't want to bump it that quickly. You know, it's better to put up several and then, you know, bump them after a few days when they've got down, you know, past page five or whatever it might be. It depends on the offer, of course. I can't really give you chapter and verse on that. But basically, that's a way of getting product, but of course it has to be something you've created. It has to be really an IM product, unless you are going to make give private label rights. I noticed there was a golf offering on there with private label rights, so that's really targeting niche marketers. You know, a niche marketer is an internet marketer who could be on the Warrior Forum, and they would buy a product from there that had private label rights. They could use, turn, and make into their own. If that makes sense. So in other words, you can't really sell training. You know, it's no good selling a dog training product on the Warrior Forum. There aren't those people there. But you could sell private labor rights to a dog training product because there are marketers on Warrior Forum who are in that niche, if that makes sense. Okay. Now what I'd like to just cover is on product creation, just rushing on very quickly. I realize time is flying. And thank you for all, you know, staying on the call and listening to me. is to create a multimedia product. Now, this is very interesting. This is something that I'm actually doing myself. And this is really just as a sort of, a step forward from your low-ticket price products, which you would be able to create with Trevor's training. I'll give you the link for that when you get the recording. And I'll put the link in there for this, and also I'll mention it later on the call. Well, why don't I give it now so that anybody who just gets this call can have it. This is my affiliate link for Trevor's product, and of course, months down the road it might not be available, but at the moment it is. If you go to mrr.im-pro.org, you'll get several folders, and you'll see the one product creation there, and that'll take you to Trevor's offer, where he's offering a product to basically create low-end products. This might be one way for people who are struggling with recording and creating a higher-ticket product to get started. I mean, it doesn't matter if you, with the creating the recorded product, if you're able to do it, because you can always use it for other things. You could break it up into other recordings. You could give it as free offers. You can make it into content by getting it transcribed. There's lots of things you could do with it. Never waste it. The most important thing is to take action, as we said before. But so what I'd like to do now is just talk about a multimedia product. What you could do is go to that same link, mrr.im-pro.org, and click on the my affiliate link for masterresellrights.com, which is just in the folder Master Resale Rights, and that'll take you to masterresellrights.com. Type in your niche description and see what comes up. And what you're looking to do is to purchase private label products, but not necessarily. For instance, a video product doesn't matter so much, as long as you're able to package it with other products, because obviously videos are very difficult to edit. It's possible, but most people don't, and you don't really need to, because most of them that are being offered on here will not have names and links and all that kind of thing mentioned in them. They might have links for sites to go to, like, for instance, Google AdWords keyword tool, or those kind of sites, which are sort of more general but not specific sites. So you can use videos that are master resale rights or even resale rights, as long as you get the, if you look at the distribution rights, it will say package with other products. You need yes there. So what you could do is you could have a look around, and of course you'll never know 100% until you've bought it. So it's obviously a little bit of a risk, particularly if it's higher value on here. I mean, generally speaking, they're valued quite accurately. So something that's a bit more, you know, under $10 tends to be private label rights that's generally available over that a slightly higher quality product. But, you know, you can suck it. I know there's some very, very good products on here. I could point you to some traffic products which are absolutely excellent. If you wanted to make a traffic product, I could give you several products on here that would make very, very good traffic products. A set of videos and some audios and also some reports. So straight away you can see there you've got a multimedia product, a report, an audio, a set of videos. That's a multimedia product. Now you might need to buy a few to get what you're looking for, and then you might want to chop and change around. And obviously if you've got the editable rights, if you can edit the products, particularly the reports, then that makes it, gives you a bit more scope. But the idea is to put a multimedia product together. So someone says, well, hang on a minute, does that mean just, you know, the PDF, the audio and the videos exactly the same? No. Obviously they need to be related, otherwise it's not going to work with your product. But what you could do is like this. You could have an in-depth teaching on audio where somebody has to be taken, you know, from one point to another, so it's sort of like A to Z in one go. That's great for an audio. Audio is great for personal development training, that kind of thing. So if there's something in your niche that's along those lines where you need an in-depth training that really helps people and they have to really listen to the whole thing to get benefit from it, that's great for an audio. We'll have a look around, see what audios are available in your niche. Videos, that's great for step-by-step. So like Trevor's product, where he's got 12 videos, you do one step. So for instance, going back to the topics and the subtopics, his topic is product creation, and then he's got these subtopics underneath. Simple product creation, which is basically talking about how to build a free product. Then decide on your niche, do research, outline your product, decide on the format, produce your product, create a sales letter, upload the product, create a download page, capture email address. Sorry, yeah, it's 10 videos, so it's almost exactly, you know, like topics and subtopics that we've been teaching. So that would be step-by-step videos, you see, one step at a time, going through your subtopics. And then maybe your report for your multimedia product would be something more general teaching. So for instance, if it's about traffic, then you want a general teaching about different traffic methods in the PDF, in the audio, an in-depth training about what's important in traffic generation, and then step by steps, perhaps on one particular traffic technique in the videos. Now that would make a great multimedia product. And you know, what's the perceived value? Well, I think a product that's well put together and that people can get a good result from is easily worth $97. That might be a way to get going using that technique. So that's quite a bit on product creation. I'd like to now move on to something else, and that is the fear of perfection. Now, this is something that reading the emails and the concept I've been having is a great problem for people. It was a problem for me and maybe probably is still for me. You know, this is our tendency that we want our products to be absolutely perfect. Okay, not absolutely perfect, but, you know, the goal in terms of quality is a lot higher than we think we can achieve. And therefore, this, what we call the fear of perfection, keeps us from actually taking action, actually putting something out there, actually seeing, you know, what sells. I don't know if how many of you saw the private label rights offer I made last week, and it's done quite well for me, actually. I think I've sold about 30 copies plus of that. Well, that was four simple products I created or had created for me or bought rights for. I bought one website, so it became my product because I bought the whole website with the product and everything. And basically, I made four $7 products, and then I split tested them to another marketer's list, the 30,000 list. And one product, which wasn't the one I expected, totally outstripped the others by several times. In other words, if you added them all up together, that one website converted much, much better than the other ones. And the one that I thought would do the best did the worst. It was an absolutely atrocious conversion rate, probably to do with the sales page, and just needs a new sales page on there. But that converted at 10%, which is, you know, quite good for a squeeze page, actually. 10%. Some squeeze pages won't do that, won't convert at 10%. And it was a $7 product, so it was great for getting buyers on my list. But that was the point, you see. I just put it out there, and the result confounded me. And that's just to illustrate, you know, you don't know until you've got something out there. So we have to take action and go for it. And the fear of perfection is what can hold us back. So, you know, please watch out for that. Don't be looking for everything to be absolutely perfect, because that will really, really hinder you. You know, a lot of people start off by thinking, right, I'm going to build this website, plan it out. It takes weeks to plan it out because obviously they're learning as they go. And then there are aspects that they don't know about to do with website conversion and, you know, little tips and tricks they don't know, they miss out on. So it doesn't actually convert very well anyway. And they spend a lot of time, you know, developing it and producing the website, and then it flops. You know, that's tragedy, that, when that happens. And, you know, going to Sean Mice, who obviously the core training is by Sean on his coaching. You know, we've got an agreement that he's going to provide the core training and I'm going to do the coaching. But he creates his products. Most of his products are created live on a teleseminar like this. And the difference is I've muted you all out. I don't really like doing that, but it helps with the recording, makes it a lot clearer and better. But he doesn't like to do that. He likes to have people, you know, still live. I don't know quite why he does, but that's his preference, obviously. But I was talking to someone the other day, and you know, he pointed out that the quality was very low, and I agree with that, and I'm doing something about that. But at the end of the day, the point is that it's the result that people get. And I'm just mentioning this because I don't want to get at that person, because you know, he made a good point, and we've talked about it quite a bit since. But the thing is that you don't want to be afraid of perfection. In other words, you know, you've got a sort of a goal in view of having a perfect product, which could be a flop because your sales page cannot convert, or it doesn't actually you know, help people perhaps in the way you expected, maybe helps people in other ways. You know, these are all the kind of things that happen. And it's really important just to get products out. And Sean's perfected this way. Well, it's interesting I use that word, but he has, because he's great at producing products fast, and he does it by having live calls, and then he makes the live calls like I'm making now actually become a product in the future, because he adds them together with other recordings, makes an in-depth training that he can sell. And then if he's got, you know, steps missed out, he just gets his recording software out and records the gaps, as it were. And it means he can produce products very, very quickly. And the other thing is, if you look at his sales pages, really they're just writing. They're writing with the PayPal button. He hasn't even got a graphic for his buy button. He just uses the PayPal one, which is very small. And, you know, it's not the best. I don't like it personally. I prefer a bigger button, which is a little bit more attractive. But he uses that. And it's perfectly well. It works perfectly well for him because he's focusing upon the result that people are going to get. His products do get results. He's very good at writing a sales page. He doesn't need all the associated bits and pieces. We were talking about this the other day that having a flash graphic and a flash, you know, like a header graphic or a graphic of the product or both, can be detrimental to your sale because that can take the focus away from the copy. You know, I think people do buy sometimes on the graphics. You know, very visual people might bell on the graphics. But really, you want to be selling to a different page with perhaps, you know, bullet points and not so much of a sort of story in the sales page. But you're going to get more sales from a site that's well written. So your sales page is well written, without a header, without graphics, and it just gets to the point and tells people what they're going to get. I'm going to cover the sales page in the next step. In fact, why don't I just go straight to do that now, having made my point? So the sales letter, because somebody was asking me about copywriting and saying this is something that they struggle with, and I'm not surprised because this is probably the hardest thing in our business is to write a sales page, what we call copywriting. You know, obviously copyright without a W, so write, you have the copyright. That's a standard thing that we use in, you know, like the music industry. People have copyright. If it's their music, then they have copyright to it. Same with printed matter. But this is copywriting with a W. So it looks the same, and of course it's similar, but it's got a W in it, that it's writing. So we're writing copy, and this is a big challenge for us. You know, if we can get to Sean's level, we're going to be doing very, very well because his sales pages are very good. He's written so many and he's really, you know, got very, very good at doing it. So I just wanted to give you a bit of a process here. This is actually Sean's process. I know there's a recording in the coaching, but this is just to give you like a quick fire way. Well, the first, you can think of this as basically as eight questions or eight topics in your sales page. You know, this could be obviously like a you could teach on this, and this would be a topic and subtopics. So the first thing is what you're selling, and then obviously you want a hook as your headline to which is related to what you're selling. To get people in, pique people's interest. And then what you do, almost straight away, you start digging into the person's need, because that's the important thing, is identifying those who have a need. You want all the people who come to your sales page who have a need that you're fulfilling in that product to buy. So you've got to do some digging around and provoking with questions. Dig into their need. So ask questions. You know, are you frustrated? Have you got problems? Whatever it might be, you know, sort of start to expose some of the pain associated with not having the product that you're selling. In other words, their need is likely to have some pain attached to it, and you have to make the most of that, really, in order to help them properly. By doing that, they see that you understand what they're doing, you understand what they need, and that you're able to provide an answer for them. So you ask some questions and do a bit of probing in that part of the sales copy. And then the third thing is you relate their need to you or your clients. So you talk about people who've had results before, you talk about you and how you were frustrated and how you solved your problem and so on. You know, you identify with them, that you are just like them. The only difference is you've solved the problem and now you're giving it to them. You're giving them the solution. Then you tell them what you've created. So the fourth point is you tell them what you've created. Because of this problem, I've now created this product to fulfill this absolute, this need, you know. Or you talk about your clients and you say, I've had many clients who've asked, they want to have this need fulfilled, and this is what I've created in order to do that for them, and so on. And then you explain what they get. So in other words, you're talking a little bit about your product, but specifically focusing on the result they're going to get, because that's what they're looking for. They're not worried, really, whether it's video, audio, a report, a multimedia, whether it's an email program where they get, you know, lessons delivered by email. They're not really worried about that. Obviously, different mediums suit different purposes, and that's for you to find out and decide and try and test. But the important thing is to focus on the result they're going to get and make you know, much of that. Don't exaggerate, but tell them accurately and succinctly and clearly the kind of result that they would be getting if they implemented your product. Then you tell them about your offer, sixthly, what it actually is you're offering. And then you give your refund policy, if you have one. Now, somebody might say, well, I'm a little bit worried about a refund policy, particularly on a high-ticket product. You know, I feel like it's obviously a difficult thing if you suddenly had several high-ticket sales and you're a little bit worried that people might refund. Because obviously, quite often people refund because they aren't able to implement the training. So the training might be quite right. You might produce something that gets the result. And they might know that. They might see that that's the case. But for some reason, only known to themselves, this happens, they might not be able to implement it, i.e. time, or B, you know, they've underestimated something, or, you know, whatever it might be. So you can get refunds for various reasons. From their side, I'm talking about, you know, even the product fulfills their needs, and you think, well, hang on a minute, what am I going to do? Well, one thing you can do, particularly with coaching, is to say to people, well, what I want to do by way of a guarantee, rather than giving a refund, you don't actually need to say that, but this is, I'm just sort of talking it out loud, is say, what I found best works is that if you find that you're struggling, I will keep working with you. So you offer, it's like added value, you offer a reassurance that you won't just drop them and you'll continue on with them. You know, there's various different ways of adding a refund policy. Just saying that in passing. The standard, of course, is 30 days. And, you know, things like ClickBank, if you put your product on ClickBank, you do have to, I think it is 30 days or maybe 60 days. But they tell you they've got a policy of having a fixed refund. You know, they want it to be basically the same across all the products that are sold on ClickBank. So obviously you have to oblige there. And then you have your close. So you say, now, you know, call to action, buy this product, and then you can give perhaps reasons. For instance, you know, you might be increasing the price, you might be limiting it. And I obviously there are two ways of doing that. There's a false scarcity and there's a true scarcity, like with a one-time offer. I mean, a true one-time offer is where there's a bit of software that means that when they go to that page, they click away, they won't get to that page again. They'll go to another page, and you can get various scripts to do that. But, of course, it is now quite common practice to offer a one-time offer without any true... So there's no software, meaning that they can't reach the page again. They can go straight back to the page if they want to. I mean, obviously, two things are happening there. If it's somebody new, doesn't know what a one-time offer is, they probably believe that it is actually a one-time offer, and therefore they're pressurized into making the sale. Or it might be that people have found in testing that actually by being able to go straight back to it, people do buy it later, and therefore they're not too worried that there's not actually a real one-time offer. But strictly speaking, that's an upsell, not a one-time offer. But the thing to bear in mind is, I mentioned the word pressure, and maybe one or two of you sort of recalled it and thought, well, I don't like the idea of too much pressure. And it is something to be aware of, to be aware of, let's face it. Because if you're making somebody buy a product because you're pressurizing them, well, you're more likely to get more refunds. And that's always something worth bearing in mind. And again, you need to test this. And, you know, sometimes people need a little bit of pressure just to push them over the edge. They really do need it. They're umming and ahhing, maybe, you know, whether it's really for them, but the one-time offer just sort of pushes them over the edge. And in some ways, you could say that was actually doing them a favor if that's what they needed to get the result. But it can also go against you. And I'm just making you aware of this fact. But, you know, whatever it is, whatever device you use to close, you need to close quite strongly. And you don't just sort of leave people hanging. You know, maybe people haven't bought from a web page before like this, from a sales page, and don't realize that you click on the button and the next thing that happens, you can explain that. You know, say you're only a step away, just click the button below and you can pay by credit card or using your PayPal account, and that's it. You know, explain it to people. And then, of course, the classic one is to have PSs at the end, which sort of affirm points. This is to really catch people who might scroll through your sales page and then you know, just go straight to the buy button, and you might catch something there. What I find is quite effective is if you feel that your product perhaps, for example, what I did with the private label rights offer I made on the Warrior Forum last week, I put three PSs for advanced marketers because I felt that advanced marketers could benefit from the product, but perhaps they would overlook it, thinking, oh, you know, just some PLR. So I made some points there to try and sort of just catch them in a little bit. You know, you use that kind of thing. I don't know whether that works or not, but just give you an example of a PS. So that's the sort of process you go through. But the important thing is that it's seamless. So you're leading somebody through. It's not sort of too jolting from one thing to another, that you're being led from the headline down through the sales copy, the story's unfolding, the picture's unfolding, they're starting to see what you're offering, they're starting to see what they need being fulfilled and the result that they're going to get, so that when they arrive at the buy button, they click the button, that's the perfect sales letter. It's impossible to come up with a perfect sales letter. You can always improve one, but that's just a way to help you with copywriting. Okay, so I want to move on very quickly now to another aspect, and that is the email marketing. This is where most of you have got to now, starting to write your emails and put them into your autoresponder campaign so that your subscribers start to receive them one at a time, you know, maybe day after day or a slightly longer interval. But what I suggest is that when you first start, you want it to be every day, because while people are hot, they know your name, they remember what product you've provided them with, even if it's a free one, that you want to remind them. And of course, what you can do, if it's a free product, remember that a lot of them just remain on people's hard drives and actually use them. You can encourage them in your emails to actually put it into operation. You know, maybe you could just do a little email about the subjects and take them through. In fact, that's one thing that's quite good, is actually to tell them when they go to the download page that you're going to be sending them emails which will remind them about various aspects and encourage them and help them and give them tips as you go through. And obviously, if you can add to the content in the free gift, that's better, that's good. But you can obviously schedule out emails in your schedule for people to receive and to be encouraged to actually put what they gave you their name and email for to put into action. Okay, so emails, right. Really, we want three things to be happening in the email marketing. This is what it's all about. And that is credibility. So you want to be building credibility all the time with people. You want them to see you as the person to go to. They want to feel that you are the person that can most help them. Now, that doesn't mean to say you have to be a guru. you don't have to portray yourself as a guru. All you need to do really is give people, you know, the correct impression. So in other words, they want a real impression of you, that you are a little bit ahead of them. That makes you very human, very accessible, and also it helps you with your credibility. Think about the gurus. Which guru can you email? Which guru can you speak to? It's very, very hard. They've usually got staff, and even if they were to phone out, it would be some member of staff who was phoning you, and so on. And if you rang their office, it would be very hard to speak to them. You'd probably be speak to a member of staff. The same with emails. If you go for a JV, you get answered by a JV manager, and so on. You know, those people are inaccessible. And they might produce good products, but can they provide the access? When you're getting going, you are able to provide more access. You will be able to more easily build a relationship with people. This ought to encourage you, those who are starting out, those who are younger, those who feel they haven't got much experience, that you can really, really help people by knowing a little bit more than them. I hope that makes sense. So credibility is one thing you want to be doing. And I think I know what's being taught in the coaching in week five is the initial email campaign where you're building credibility. And one of the things I'll just mention in that, just as an example, is the very, 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 very high ticket coaching program. The coaching program, which probably people aren't going to buy because you're going to price it so high. But the whole point of offering that is A, that if somebody really wants it, they can get it. So it has to be a real offer, not just something, you know, that's pie in the sky. You need to be able to deliver, in other words, what you're saying in that offer. And then you're offering at a very, very high price. So, for example, let me ask you this question. In your niche and everything you know about your niche, and we're thinking more about people who have got a good knowledge, one of you, for example, is just starting out with SEO, but we've been emailing quite a bit and discussing things, and we've been on, you know, interacting a little bit, and he's been on calls before, and he's actually got a good knowledge of SEO, one of the coaching clients, and that's, it's a good niche for him to go into, and he's got a lot more knowledge than most people on SEO, so he's already got quite a bit of expertise, although of course he wants to add to that. But let's just say, let's take that niche, for example, which is a little bit specialized in some ways, but let's just take the SEO niche, so the search engine optimization niche, where you're looking at making websites rank in the search engines, particularly Google. You want that website to be shown up when someone puts a keyword in that's relevant to the website, and they come to your site. That's called search engine optimization, as I think probably most of you know. But let's just take that for a minute and talk about a high ticket program. Now what you would offer, perhaps SEO isn't the best example for this, but let's just say for want of argument, you know, whatever the niche can be, sometimes it's going to be a better niche for this, sometimes it's going to be not such a good niche for this. But let's just say that you were going to offer a very high ticket coaching program where there's a possibility of the person actually coming to see you and sit with you, and you give them all the information you possibly can on that subject. Maybe you even do a website critique and look at their website and make tips, and you give them strategies, and also you give them products that they can take away and learn to do SEO themselves and so on, because obviously it's not just the case of them having their website improve in the 3 days they're with you. But what would you charge for that? What would you charge for someone to come book into a local hotel? You haven't got to pay for the hotel. You're just charging for the coaching. And you spend 3 days with them. So you book an office somewhere, and then you spend 3 days with them and tell them everything you know about that particular subject. What would you charge for that? Well, you can charge a very high amount for that. You could charge, you know, thousands of dollars, maybe $10,000, or maybe you want to charge more. Whatever it is, that's what you make that offer. And you put that sales page up, offering this very, very high ticket program, which is basically one-on-one coaching. And you have that in your email campaign so that people come to it. They hit on that. They think, $10,000. This person, he charges a huge amount for this. And they can sort of see that they would benefit from it. Obviously, they probably won't buy it because they can't afford that kind of money, maybe. But that is the point of it. It improves your credibility. It gives you, you know, gigantic credibility. The fact that you have got a high, very, very high level coaching program, which maybe no one will ever buy, but that's not the point of it. If they do, great. If they don't, doesn't matter, because the whole point of it is to give you credibility. Then you want to get interaction going with the people on your list. So you start asking them questions related to the niche that you're in. You know, the better the question, the more response you're going to get, and get people to reply. Say, well, if you reply to me, you know, with I'll answer you, and so on. And you do that. You ask them questions in your email. Just have an email that perhaps probes something that you weren't maybe able to do on the sales page, or you're doing it a different way. You know, I'm sure you'll think of ways to do this. You're just probing questions and looking for interaction, so that people can actually interact with you, and that builds a lot of credibility as well. The fact that you are available, and the fact that you are asking questions that are relevant to them, that's great. Getting interaction going, and of course you're building relationship, which is the most important thing. And then of course you have emails which are selling. And now you might do that by having a content email with a link at the end, saying if you want to know more, then click this link, and then it goes to a product. And of course, the more targeted and the more seamless that is, the more related, the better. Or you might have a selling email, which you know, actually says, many of my clients are found of, you know, struggling with this, and I've created a product for it, and click here. But you're, as you in the coaching, you'll actually be learning a whole process that Sean uses to do that. And he's like a pre-launch and then a launch and so on, and then, you know, the sort of the offer ending type email. And you can pick and choose from those, obviously, as you see fit. But that's the whole point, is then you're launching a product. So what's happening then is, as your email sequence builds up, as you add more emails, you're building this relationship with people, you're interacting with them, you're building your credibility, you're showing them that you are a product creator, you're somebody who is a problem solver in your niche. And all this is creating a whole aura about you, which is very positive, about who you are, about what you can do, and about your products. And that is what creates the sales, that's what creates the high ticket. So this emailing is critical. I know I've said that the sales letter is probably the hardest thing, because in terms of creating one aspect of your business, the sales letter probably is the hardest and needs the most practice, and that's why, you know, it's good to get going and do one and see how you get on. But with the emails, this is where a lot of marketers are going wrong. They're not focusing upon the email sequence. Of course, what happens is they're not very aggressive in their email campaign. That can happen for various reasons, but we're talking about having an email a day, at least to start with. And that's quite aggressive, and you're going to get unsubscribes. And, you know, maybe if you're just building a list to start with, you get an unsubscribe, and you're frightened of that. But don't worry about it, because what that means is that person wasn't really wanting to interact with you anyway, and you just reminded them of that fact. So it makes no difference, the fact they've still unsubscribed. You really want them off your list anyway, because they weren't going to buy from you. You know, maybe there's the odd case where they object to something, or they don't like having emails, you know, so regularly. Well, that's the way it is. And if you haven't hooked them and got them interested in you as a person, as a marketer, by, you know, a month, then they're probably not going to buy from you in the end anyway. So it's not something to worry about. And this really is the way to go, is to be very aggressive in your email campaign. So that's really something that you need to focus on, and you'll get this in lesson 5 and 6. is the writing of the emails and starting to load them up into your autoresponder service. And, you know, that is really why that is so important, because this is how you build the relationship. This is how you distinguish yourself. This is where the product sales come from. This is where the high income comes from. This is a very simple model, but obviously there are various tasks in this model that are quite demanding, and this is one of them. Being able to write emails. But the more you do, the more you're going to be able to do. And the more you practice, the better your emails will become, and the more, you know, seamless will be the whole experience. We were talking in a previous recording about having a seamless experience for your visitors. So from the traffic source to your opt-in page to your emails that they're receiving, then to the products that they're being offered, everything's sort of seamless. It's all connected. It's all relevant to them. The more seamless you can make that, the better it is. Okay, so that's really just covering the briefly, I hasten to add, the very important aspects of email marketing. Now, I've just got one more thing to teach in this part of the call. This is to do with a question from Giulio, and it's to do with branding. Very good question. Thank Giulio for the question about branding. You know, branding ourselves as marketers, branding ourselves as you know, experts in our niche. What do we do about this? And it's a good question. Let me talk firstly about domain names, because I put them into different categories. Basically, you've got, I think, three main categories of domain name, although you might be able to, you know, put these into sub sort of categories and whatever. But let me just give you the three. The first one is like a kind of name. So, for instance, you might have something to do with your name, and then you shorten it, and you know, we have nicknames for people. We might have a nickname kind of website. So, for instance, I've got Rick Mort, which is RIKMORT. Rick Mort. That's nice and short. People can remember it. That's quite good for if you were to do some offline advertising, because people can see it and they can remember it, hopefully. And you know, obviously, if you can make more memorable, it is the better in terms of that kind of thing. But that's like a kind of nickname domain. Then you might have a product domain, although of course these would tend to not be like a major website or a blog or anything like that, although they might be a blog. For instance, I've got webmarketingformula.com, which is a blog. But you would have a product related name. So for instance, let me think of a product. Well, Trevor's, you know, Fast Product Creation. We could have a fastproductcreation.com. It's probably already been taken, but that's a name. You see, it relates to the product. And obviously, when people go to that domain, they get the sales page for the product. That's a product-related domain name. And then the third kind would be a keyword-related domain name. And I got quite keen on these not too long ago. And I've got some quite good ones. I've got one that I managed to get straight onto page one for that keyword. And you basically have your keyword in the domain. So, for instance, if it is website traffic, you'd have websitetraffic.com. If you were wanting to register that now, I'm almost certain you wouldn't get it. So you might have to put hyphens in, so website-traffic.com. And then if you still couldn't get it, you can use org or net. They're quite well known. Org tends to be used for things like, you know, government things or big organizations. So org is quite good, particularly for blogs, I think. Anyway, that's enough on the domain names. That's just to give you some ideas about how you might be thinking. One thing I'm doing now, and this is why I say it might be a slightly different category, is very short domain. So I've got im-pro.org. Obviously, that's Internet Marketing Pro. Come up with that one. And what I'm doing is I'm putting a lot of subdomains on there. So you just go into the cPanel and create a subdomain, and then you've got effectively another domain, but it just adds some words at the beginning. So for instance, that one I gave earlier, mrr.im-pro.org, is a subdomain of im-pro.org. and you can actually have you know, a whole new website on there. So what you could do is, if you had a blog, for instance, on the main domain, which I do in fact have on im-pro.org, although I'm not actually uploaded any content yet because it's still brand new, but I could have other websites on the subdomains, and I could have other blogs even, because they're treated in cPanel as a totally new domain, even though it is a subdomain, if that makes sense. Okay, now branding. So we're talking about, you know, whether you make something of your name or not. Well, that's really a difficult question to answer, because it depends on your niche. So have a look around your niche and see if people are branding themselves and whether it seems to make a difference. You just have to, you know, do a bit of guesswork in it, a bit of research, and it'll probably come, in the end, come down to guesswork. And I wouldn't agonize it about it too much, because at the end of the day, you're going to be getting going, and then obviously you're getting a relationship building, and then people will know you as you've branded yourself at that particular time, and then that tends to stick. So you don't need to worry about it too much. Most people in internet marketing would tend to use their own name. I think that's probably because, obviously, experience isn't that important, as long as the, you know, it tends to be quite product orientated in internet marketing. And obviously people are always coming on who've, you know, sort of burst onto the scene, although that's happening less frequently now, certainly in terms of big numbers. But, you know, there's lots of people coming and, you know, you suddenly hear of them and they've got, you know, an amazing product, and that seems to be possible. So it doesn't seem to really matter very much. So it's difficult to answer the question directly. I actually did email Julio and say this to him, and say that I wouldn't agonize it about too much. I'd just make a decision whether you're going to brand yourself, you know, in a certain way, and then just do it. But I think the thing is to look at your niche and see how other people are branding themselves, whether they're, you know, making a big thing of their own name or what it might be, and go that route. Okay, so what we'll do now is we'll open up the call for some questions.